Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Now, your ideas don't have to wait. Now, they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, and evolving your passions. They push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm Jonathan Strickland.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And today we are going to tackle part one of a two-part series about alternative fuels.
Yes, we could technically do like a seven-part series on this, but we decided to kind of condense it the way that you would perhaps a natural gas or...
Nice.
Yeah, hey, look at that. Yeah. You're not the only one who can make puns. Really,
yes.
Weakly.
We are compressing these subjects into two parts. The first part is going to be kind of an overview of the different alternatives that we think of with alternative fuel, keeping in mind that, you know, the ones that we're talking about today are the major players and that there could be an alternative fuel right around the corner that is completely different from the ones we're chatting about now. That's a possibility, but these are the ones that are currently in some form of production and use in various places around the world. It also will behoove us to mention the fact that Lauren and I come from the United States of America.
That is where we live. That is our frame of reference. And a lot of the information available to us immediately centered around that kind of experience. So we know more about the laws, the prices, and the general availability.
Exactly. Right. What's the infrastructure status in the U.S.? Now, keep in mind that some of these alternative fuels have a lot of support in other nations around the world. Some nations have invested a great deal in, say, propane, for example, as a possible fuel source. And we're really talking about fuel for the most part as vehicle fuel, and specifically vehicle fuel for you guys, as in consumers.
Yes, we will mention a couple of places where some of these fuels have been used commercially or in government fleet vehicles.
Right, or in industrial vehicles that are used in factories or construction yards or whatever. But for the most part, we're really looking at this is the alternative to the stuff what you put in your gas tank. or diesel tank, as the case may be.
Or hydrogen fuel cell, or et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So, you can look at these in lots of different ways. You can divide them up into all sorts of different categories. And so, we kind of arbitrarily made these into our own categories based upon my whim.
Not completely arbitrary. We're first going to cover, I think, biodiesel and ethanol.
Yeah. And the idea here is that these are two fuels that we get from organic sources, and then we process it to make it into fuel. Also, these two different fuels, they are different. Ethanol and biodiesel are not the same thing. These two fuels also, besides requiring some processing, have some other stuff in common. For instance, both of them you will frequently see in blended form, meaning that we actually blend these with petroleum-based fuels. In the case of ethanol, we're talking gasoline, and with biodiesel, we're talking
diesel.
Yeah. But anyway, in both cases, we're talking about mixing this biologically created fuel with stuff that is petroleum-based. Keeping in mind, of course, if we want to go all the way back, even petroleum-based stuff was organic at one point. But
sure. But there's a difference between man-made processed organics
and stuff that took millions and millions and millions of years to form the way it did.
Right.
Yeah, there's a tiny difference there.
let's start with
ethanol, I think, because that one is probably the one that a lot of people who may not be aware of it are using already.
Right. I think that most places in America use a blend of 90% gasoline to about 10% ethanol.
Yeah, it's called E10. That's the general term for that blend, or gasohol. That's also what it's often referred to.
Which sounds so goofy.
And it's I've seen it increasing, or rather I should say there's a decreasing trend to call it that. I think it almost has a stigma against it because people realize that ethanol, which, by the way, is ethyl alcohol. You know, it's just another name for ethyl alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
That ethyl alcohol could be pretty hard on some engine parts, depending upon what your engine had in it, like various tubes and connectors and things like that.
Oh, right. So, it is a solvent. So one of the problems in using some of the higher blends in normal engines is that it can start knocking some extra stuff loose.
Right.
And clogging fuel filters that way.
Yeah.
And B can start eating away at some of the rubber components, fuel lines and stuff.
Exactly,
like that.
Exactly. And so what's kind of funny is that when it's eating away at that stuff that's built up in an engine, let's say that you've been using regular gasoline in an engine for a while, but the engine can also accept ethanol of various blends, like even a high concentration of ethanol to actual gasoline. Well, the nice thing is that it's actually going to start cleaning your system, but the problem is all that stuff that's built up has to go somewhere, and that's when you get into that problem of it clogging up filters and things like that.
Oh, right. Which is why should you have a vehicle that can accept both and you start using higher blends of ethanol, it's recommended to replace your fuel pumps with something that is more capable of dealing with that.
Right, right. And then once you've got everything, cleaned out that first run through, just have a basic maintenance and replacement schedule, just as you would your normal vehicle, the way most of us ignore. I say that because I know a lot of car owners, and I think regular maintenance is something that just happens to other people.
I've been that guy once or twice. I
take the train, so what do I know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so it's very common in the United States. In fact, I think something like 95% of gas stations have used some blend of ethanol. And part of the reason for that is that ethanol will increase the octane of your gasoline. Now, octane is this rating that we think of that can actually reduce what we call engine knocking. So if you've ever been in an old car running on, a low octane gasoline, and you start hearing this weird knocking noise coming out of the engine, that's from this octane issue. Adding an ethanol increases the octane. What it also does, however, is it lowers the actual energy content of the gasoline, because ethanol does not have as much potential energy stored in it as gasoline does.
Right, which in all practicality means that gallon for gallon, you're going to get less mileage out of ethanol than you will out of gasoline.
Right, and the less mileage all depends upon that blend, right?
Right.
Like, so if it's an E10 blend where you've got the 10% ethanol and 90% gasoline, you might get 3 to 4% fewer miles per gallon than you would if you were using just regular gasoline. If you were using E85, which is kind of the flip side of that, it's 85% ethanol and 15% gasoline. This is something that flexible fuel vehicles, or FFVs as we call them in the biz, can use. Then you're talking about a significant drop in miles per gallon. You're
up
talking
to
about
25 to 30%.
Right. That's big, right? I mean, these are why we have these different considerations, and we'll do a full episode about why there are a lot of challenges to switching to alternative fuel, so I'm not going to really get into it there, but you can kind of already see one of the issues here.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have a lower energy content than gasoline. The cost of ethanol kind of varies. In the Midwest, where you've got a lot of places that are actually growing the feedstocks, that's what we call the stuff what we turn into ethanol.
Right, right. Starch crops are what are used to ferment and distill stuff into ethanol.
Yeah,
and,
especially here in the U.S.
That is the stuff, yes. And so corn is here in the U.S. is used mostly. In Brazil, I think it's sugarcane, mm-hmm. But you can also use wheat, barley, potatoes.
Right. The starch-based or sugar-based stuff can be turned into this. You can also use cellulosic ethanol, which would come from things like wood chips or switchgrass. Now, this stuff has potentially a better return on investment when it comes to energy. There's this thing called EROI, that's energy return on investment. Whenever we're talking about producing any sort of fuel, producing the fuel requires you put energy into the production. And so it's really important that the energy you get out from that potential fuel, like whatever you're going to use that fuel for, the energy is greater
than what you've put in, right?
Right.
Because otherwise, why are you doing it?
Yeah, otherwise it would be an energy sink. Because mm-hmm. let's say that, you know, for the most part, the energy you're going to be getting to produce this stuff is still coming from fossil fuels, because that's what we really depend upon right now. So if you would actually consume more fossil fuel producing this alternative fuel than you would if you had used the fossil fuel in the first place, then it's an energy sink and you're playing a losing game. You
right.
want that energy to be greater.
The same way that that fusion reactors are not popular yet because they use more energy to start up than they put out.
Exactly, yeah. If you've got an energy sink, then really you've just got a thing what goes beep. I'm using what a lot in this. I apologize that. I don't know what it was that got into my head. I shot a video today, cackled insanely, and then got called on it on Twitter. Lauren.
Hey, that was not Lauren. That was your humble narrator. That was completely different.
Fair enough.
Whole separate persona.
That's true.
You can talk to her.
Right. So, but some other things about ethanol. Ethanol does tend to put out fewer greenhouse gas emissions than gasoline combustion does, which is important. You know, one of the questions we have to ask ourselves about moving to an alternative fuel is, why are you doing it? Right? Because there are a lot of different potential answers you could give. And if one of those answers is, I'm concerned about the environmental impact of gasoline consumption, then something like this, where you're talking about fewer greenhouse gas emissions, is important. So that's something to keep in mind. Ethanol, of course, is also produced domestically. That's also important because in the United States, you know, some of our oil, a great deal of our oil, around half of it really, is brought in
imported.
Yeah, imported. And some of that's imported from places in the world where...
It would be perhaps better for us to not be supporting economically and politically.
Right. The money that we are putting out could be funding things that could be harmful to either that region's stability or to the United States' stability in general. And so anything you can produce domestically removes reduces that issue. So that's another reason why ethanol is considered to be a nice alternative, is because it's something that we can produce domestically. However, there's also an issue about how much ethanol we produce versus how much gasoline we produce. But again, I'll save that for the next show,
because
I don't want to spoil everything in this one. But anyway, that's generally the big picture on ethanol. Now, for ethanol, for like things like that E85 blend where you have the 85% ethanol, again, that's something that's only really useful in specific vehicles that have been tooled to accept that as a fuel. So
these are called flexible fuel vehicles.
Right, exactly. So you don't want to fill up your right off the lot car that normally runs on gasoline with E85, because that's not a good fuel for it. It could eat through those rubber hoses like you were talking about, Lauren. So this is, you know, it's one of those things where you're really looking at offsetting gasoline consumption, not completely replacing it. All right, so let's talk about biodiesel, which is the other sort of biological fuel source that we wanted to mention. Biodiesel, of course, as the name suggests, is not a replacement for gasoline. It's more like a substitute for diesel, which is, again, a petroleum-based fuel, but is different from gasoline. So a gasoline engine will not burn diesel fuel efficiently. You have to have a diesel engine to do that.
Right.
Now, I actually remember when diesel cars were more popular than they are now, because that's how old I am.
I was about to say, I don't remember that at all, Jonathan, and I'm not even making fun of you right now.
Yeah, no, I remember it because I was alive in the 70s, and I saw diesel engine cars, you know, because they're still very common in industrial use in large vehicles like buses or trucks. But there are still cars that are diesel engine cars. They're just not as common as gasoline
powered
cars.
Yeah, a lot of, and I did want to mention a lot of the changes that have been made to how we consume fossil fuels started out in the 1970s with here in America, the Clean Air Act being passed by the Environmental Protection Agency, mm-hmm. and also the Arab oil embargo from 73 to 74, and then the Iranian Revolution from 78 to 79.
Yeah, we had some major fuel crises in the United States in the 70s, which really started the ball rolling. Things that have kept the ball rolling are everything from the domestic safety issue that I referred to earlier and the environmental issue, as well as just people concerned with trying to find a way that would some sort of fuel that could be less expensive, less volatile in price than gasoline.
Right, because between, say, 78 and 1981, the cost of oil per barrel skyrocketed from $14 to over $35.
Well, I remember when I first moved to Atlanta, gasoline was 85 cents a gallon.
I love watching things like Die Hard, where suddenly it pans past a gas station and you know that it was before our time because it's like 79 cents a gallon.
Yeah, now it's over, you know, $3 a gallon easily in most of the United States.
And not that we should complain about that, because in Europe it's much, much, much higher.
Right. But again.
But anyway.
Sign of the times. So biodiesel is interesting in that this is diesel fuel that's manufactured from vegetable oils, animal fats, and even recycled restaurant grease.
Yeah.
I remember reading a news report a few years ago, an article in Creative Loafing, which is a local weekly paper here in Atlanta. And it was a feature on a guy out in Athens who had tinkered with his car so that it could accept a form of restaurant grease with minimum amount of processing. So he was actually using biodiesel, and kind of the issues he was running into on the official end, because this was all kind of from a tinkerer's perspective, as opposed to this is something that was fully supported by an infrastructure.
Right.
But the idea here is that you're using this stuff, this renewable resource, because there's, you know, we can keep growing more vegetables or mm-hmm. animals or McDonald's, and then we get the stuff from it, this grease or fat or oil, and process it. And in that processing, we then end up with this biodiesel. It's a biodegradable fuel. It's non-toxic. So
less toxic than, say, table salt.
Which is great, you know, right? You know, you have a massive biodiesel fuel spill. It is biodegradable, it's non-toxic, and it makes the highway smell like French fries. So really, I mean, who loses?
Which isn't to say that a giant oil spill of this stuff would be happy for the environment. It's not going to, like, moisturize all of the seals' faces or anything like that.
Right,
but
yeah.
It just, you know, but it's a little bit less scary and easier to clean up.
Yeah, yeah.
Than petroleum-based oil.
It's considered to have a lower environmental impact from that perspective. I mean, you still have to process the stuff. So you still have to put energy into the system, just like you do with ethanol. So
right.
Don't think that this takes fossil fuels out entirely. And in fact, just like ethanol, biodiesel is something that is frequently blended with petroleum-based diesel.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. and you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride, we're gonna have some fun.
They'll explore and listen to the sounds of amazing places, like farms, racetracks, the moon, and even
construction sites.
That's right, Blippi.
Follow your ears, what do you hear?
And they'll meet new friends along the way. Alongside Blippi and Mika, your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Blippi and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So there are different blends. There's B2, which is only 2% biodiesel and 98% petroleum-based diesel. B5, which is 5% biodiesel, and B20, which is 20% biodiesel. You can get B100, although I don't think there are any consumer vehicles that run on B100, but B100 would be 100% pure biodiesel. Most vehicles in the United States don't go over B5 as the recommended blend for running in that engine. The engines, the manufacturers say this engine was not designed to run anything with a greater than B5 blend for biodiesel to diesel.
But even those very small concentrations can make a very large difference in the way that the fuel burns.
Right. In fact, again, just like with ethanol, the biodiesel has a lower fuel economy than pure diesel does. So, for example, if you go with B100, it's something like a 10% lower fuel economy.
Right, which means that it would take about 1.1 gallons of biodiesel to equal 1 gallon of standard.
Right, whereas B20 is more like just a 2% deficit in fuel economy. So, obviously, when you're getting close to B5 or B2, the change is negligible to the point where you probably wouldn't notice it
that much.
Yeah,
you're really min-maxing your driving experience.
Yeah, and hardly anyone. I mean, there are people who do that. Like, there's some people who go to some pretty extreme lengths to try and maximize fuel economy.
My programmer friends sometimes get bored in their hybrid vehicles and do that.
It's really tracking it. I think of the people who are drafting behind massive trucks. That's not a safe thing to do, by the way.
No.
But it does actually affect your fuel economy.
Increase your, yep.
But it decreases your life expectancy. So now it does, in general, have fewer greenhouse gas and pollutant emissions than diesel, although there is the possibility of an increase in nitrous oxide emissions. So it's not like this is across the board cleaner than petroleum-based diesel.
Right.
But for most of the types of emissions that we would consider harmful, it's better than the petroleum-based one. It's just not hands down a runaway win. So you can't just point at biodiesel and say, this is the cure for our environmental problems.
Right. It does reduce carbon dioxide emissions, but yeah.
Right. And that's a big one. I mean, sure. CO2 emissions, that's a big problem. And also, they point out that really the CO2 emissions, the way that it quote unquote reduces them in part is because you are creating feedstocks again in order to create the biodiesel. And by creating the feedstocks, you're creating carbon dioxide sinks.
Right. You're offsetting some of that, some of what's going to be burned later.
Right. Yeah. The stuff that's going to be released into the atmosphere is actually getting pulled in by the stuff that is turning into
fuel. It is growing. Yeah.
So in this case, it's almost deceptive in a way to say lower carbon dioxide emissions, because part of that is due to the fact that they're saying, well, yeah, it's lower because
we're growing stuff.
Yeah. This stuff is taking carbon dioxide in.
Yeah.
But I mean, you have to, that's one of the other things that we'll be talking about in this podcast is you really have to look at the big picture.
There's so many factors involved of you know, how you create something, how you process it, and how you ship it. Oh yeah. And what it does, natural gas is going to be big on that one. And, yeah. And what it does to the environment overall. Another benefit of biodiesel is that it's another thing that acts as a solvent in your engine, which can again create some problems
if you
aren't, watching out for your fuel pump and, rubber bits.
Right. And then once you do get all that cleaned out, all that gunk that's in there, then it should run much more cleanly than a typical diesel engine would.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, a lot of people point out that this is one of those things that if we can figure out a way to make it work, it's a huge benefit because, first of all, you're taking stuff that nobody wants, used restaurant grease.
Right.
You know, stuff that would, you know, we already have to figure out a way of disposing of that so it doesn't clog up drains or cause problems. If we can then take what would normally be a waste product and turn it into a fuel product, then that's a win-win in that scenario.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, once you start looking outside that's when you're like, all right, but you have to take these other things into consideration.
Well, yeah, you know, both biodiesel and ethanol can be created from what we would normally be considered as waste crops. You know, extra bits that we wouldn't really be using that would either, you know, go into mulch or a landfill or something.
Yeah, although the ethanol argument, people get really up in arms about that, because if you're talking about growing corn just for fuel and then you take into account other things like starvation issues or, you know, good or effective land use, then that brings up another debate. But again, I think that actually fits in our second episode,
right,
probably a little more. So we'll save that. We'll get on the soapbox for the second one. We'll spare you that for right now. So that's the biological stuff. Let's see. Do you want to go right into the more fossil fuel oriented ones, or do you want to do hydrogen next?
I've got natural gas next on my paper.
All right,
so
let's do that then.
Let's do it.
So natural gas, we're primarily talking about methane here. Methane is one of those greenhouse gases that you hear about a lot. It actually has the capacity to do far more harm than carbon dioxide, but on a shorter time scale. So its greenhouse effect is greater than CO2. It does not stay in the atmosphere as long as CO2 does.
Right.
But that's one of those things that people will point out. But methane is a clear and odorless gas that might surprise you when you think of all the things that methane is said to be generated by. Pure methane is, it's clear and it's odorless. It's only, gets odors from other things that are mixed in with it.
Right.
It is normally sold in one of two forms. either compressed natural gas, where you actually have it in compressed canisters.
Mm-hmm. In gas form.
Yep. Or liquefied natural gas, which means that
it's really compressed.
Yeah, to the point where it's actually liquefied. Now, we all know that, or if we don't, we will soon, that when you compress a gas enough, assuming that you've got the right setup here, you are actually pushing those gas atoms closer and closer together. And if you are in the right conditions, you can then eventually get at enough pressure where you can liquefy something.
Right.
Now, once it is released from that pressure, assuming that the temperature outside of the pressurized compartment is greater than its boiling point, it will then immediately boil off into gas. We see this with lots of different stuff. So, for example, liquid nitrogen, if it, once it's removed from being pressurized, starts to boil off,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes a gaseous nitrogen, which is what, why, you know, you see that whenever you see any of those liquid nitrogen demonstrations, you just see this vapor.
See this outpouring of yeah.
That's part of this whole process. Well, anyway, methane is one of those that at room temperature is a gas. It's essentially carbon and four hydrogen atoms. That's your basic building block for methane. And it can be used either in vehicles that are dedicated to using natural gas, or it can be used in what is called a dual or bi-fuel vehicle, which means they can use both methane or gasoline or diesel, depending upon what the engine is.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the reasons we could look at natural gas as being an alternative fuel is we produce a lot of it in the United States. A lot of nations produce a great deal of natural gas.
Yeah, the thing about natural gas is that it occurs naturally in association with crude oil. Usually when you tap into a well, you're going to get both crude oil and natural gas.
Right. So it's a byproduct in that sense. But it's a byproduct that's useful. It means that you get two things for one process.
Right. We only started being able to use it in, I think, about the 1890s, which is when they started figuring out how to basically bottle and transport it.
Right.
More
it's
efficiently.
The whole process, processing natural gas so that you can actually draw it off of everything else and make it into a usable fuel. About 94% of the natural gas in the United States is domestically produced. So only 6% or so is imported from outside the U.S. Other nations produce all the natural gas they want, or some of them have to import quite a bit of it. And mostly in the U.S., we use it for heating and cooking. It's used for electric power production and also in industrial uses. Very little of it is being used in transportation outside of a few notable instances. Like here in Atlanta, we have a public transportation system called MARTA. And a lot of the
MARTA buses and
buses,
trains?
Yeah. Actually, yeah. just the buses.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was about to say trains and I was trying to catch myself. But yeah, the buses in on MARTA, for the most part, are natural gas buses. So they are using this as their fuel. It tends to produce fewer smog-producing pollutants. By about 20 to 45%, depending upon the vehicle's calibration and the specific type of natural gas you're using, whether it's that compressed natural gas or liquefied natural gas, as well as a few other variables. It also is it produces 5 to 9% fewer greenhouse gas emissions, so it's cleaner than gasoline. Although you're still producing greenhouse gases, it's not like it's eliminating them.
Oh, right. It is still a fossil fuel. So even though it's an alternate, it's...
Yeah, and that's another thing to remember. It is a fossil fuel.
It's not a renewable resource the way that, for example, ethanol and biodiesel are.
Right, exactly. It does tend to be cheaper than gasoline, so that's good. It does have lower energy content than gasoline. So just like the other ones we've mentioned, in fact, you're going to see a running theme here, where the energy content of the fuel, when you compare it to a comparable amount of gasoline, is lower.
One of the many reasons that gasoline became popular in the first place was that it was so efficient.
Yeah, it had a high energy density compared to other fuels, and another thing to keep in mind is that it's really hard to compare some of these fuels against gasoline because they are in different formats, right?
So, right. How do you compare a gallon of air versus a gallon of liquid?
It's... Yeah, you have to look at cubic feet of gas versus a gallon of liquid. It becomes very difficult to make a meaningful comparison. Same sort of thing will come true in hydrogen, but I'll talk about that when we get there.
Oh, right. The real measure that we can figure out is just kind of how many miles per gallon you get off of it. And even then you start to be affected by things like the fact that now natural gas tanks can be very heavy, and drag down the efficiency of a vehicle that they're used in.
I think for me, the best measurement I would be able to say is if you had two vehicles that were of comparable weight and design, and they were both fully fueled with whatever fuel they had, how far could they get before you had to call mom to come pick you up? And if that number is greater with gasoline, then you say, all right, well, if you're talking about a fully fueled vehicle, whatever the definition of that
tank,
is.
Whatever kind of tank it is filled up.
Right. And that.
Tank or battery.
Or fuel cell. The two vehicles are of equivalent weight and design because you have to figure the design too. I mean, if they both weigh the same, but one of them's essentially a wall and the other one is a super sleek car, then obviously that's going to play a part. It's really complicated.
If one weighs like a Vespa and the other is a SUV.
Right. Yeah. This just shows you how complex this problem is. It really is one of those things where if you look at it just on the surface and you say, oh, this has fewer greenhouse gas emissions and it's not nearly as many particulates.
Then
this
why
is the
don't
one
we use
should do.
That? We should use this all the time. No,
right.
Not necessarily.
Yeah. And then you look
Lots
at all
factors.
The factors. It's a complicated problem. I'm glad I just get to paid to talk about it as opposed to have to make the decisions.
Absolutely.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan. And on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey parents, looking for something fun to listen to in the car with your kids? Blippi and Mika have a brand new podcast, Blippi and Mika's Road Trip. Each week, the Blippi Mobile will take your kids to amazing places.
Click, click, put your seatbelts on, get ready for a ride, we're gonna have some fun.
They'll explore and listen to the sounds of amazing places like farms, racetracks, the moon, and even
construction sites.
That's right, Flippy.
Follow your ears. What do you hear?
And they'll meet new friends along the way. Alongside Flippy and Mika, your kids will learn awesome new things about the places and things they see and hear. It's a fun, interactive listening experience for the whole family. Listen to Flippy and Mika's Road Trip on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, before the break, we talked about natural gas. Let's talk about another type of fossil fuel, propane, which is also called liquefied petroleum gas. You know, we talked about how natural gas, we can find that in the same places that we find oil. Propane is actually something that is truly a byproduct of natural gas processing.
Of the processing of, right.
Yeah, or even of crude oil. So we can get it from processing natural gas or crude oil. Propane is this colorless and odorless fuel, very much, just as methane is colorless and odorless. By the way, if you're wondering how is this possible, because I know the smell of things like natural gas, that's because odorants are actually mixed in with that fuel.
So because they're so dangerous that if they weren't, then if you got a leak, it's a lot easier to scent detect a leak than to die of overexposure.
Right. Yeah. You would want there to be some way of detecting it apart from a spark ends up igniting a huge explosion, obviously. So by mixing odorants in, it's really just to alert
us. It's a safety measure.
Yeah. To its presence.
Right. So propane and butane, which, you know, is used in lighter fluid,
sure,
are both collected during the production of natural gas and oil refinery in mm-hmm. order to prevent them from condensing and causing processing difficulties.
Right. So we can actually use this in other formats as well, other uses.
Yes.
So in the United States, for example, propane's used in home and water heating. It's used in cooking. As a Strickland, I am very well aware of propane and propane accessories. That joke was never funny. And then it's also used in refrigerating and clothes drying and farm and industrial equipment and even in drying corn. That's mainly what we use it for here in the United States. 90% of the propane here in the U.S. comes from domestic sources. So again, we produce it ourselves, here in the U.S. and we don't import that much compared to the stuff we produce. As a fuel, it does have lower carbon dioxide emissions than gasoline.
But it also has a lower energy content.
Yeah. So again, if you're talking about a fully fueled vehicle with propane versus a fully fueled vehicle with gasoline, you may not be able to go as far in the propane vehicle. It also can emit fewer carbon monoxide and non-methane hydrocarbon emissions, so it's also cleaner in that respect. It tends to be less expensive than gasoline, although that price can fluctuate over time.
Right. Even over the course of a year, especially here in the U.S., where we use it a lot for heating, it can be very much more expensive than gasoline in the winter and
right.
then very much cheaper in the summer.
Yep. All depends on when and where you're picking it up. And it's, it's got a higher octane than gasoline does, but like you said, it has a lower fuel economy. So it does have a trade-off. And it's a fossil fuel, you know, just like natural gas is a fossil fuel. So
it is technically non-renewable.
Right. So
or renewable over the course of billions of years.
Right, right. It's not renewable on any kind of time frame that does us any good whatsoever.
Until we hit that fancy singularity thing that's coming in 20 to 40 years.
Right. And like the compressed natural gas, you have to worry about how you're going to actually store this stuff. You know, it's not the same as the liquid gasoline that we can pump into a car.
Right. It has to be pressurized and
compressed essentially. So yeah, it's usually under when you get a propane, it's usually a propane tank that's under
those
a lot of
big,
compression.
Heavy tanks. Yeah.
Yeah. So so refueling would be an issue, just as it would be with some of the other alternatives we talked about. Ethanol and biodiesel are again the most like gasoline, so that
they're the most compatible with current engine designs.
And infrastructure,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this case, if we were to make a switch to propane, then it would require us to rethink how we package and deliver and consume this stuff. And how would you refuel your vehicle? Would it require you to get the assistance of a couple of burly dudes? Probably would for me. I don't have a large lifting capacity. So, But that's kind of the lowdown on propane. And now we're going to talk a little bit about one of my favorite elements of all time, which is good because it's also one of the it is the most abundant in the universe.
Hydrogen.
Hydrogen, yes. Hydrogen, of course, is the fuel that we think about when we think about what the sun is doing, where it's taking hydrogen and fusing it into helium.
At a temperature of millions of degrees.
Doom. Yeah. I can't not do that. We've done that before in the podcast. I know. Don't write in and tell us that we did that joke already. We know we did.
We can't help ourselves.
They might be giants are awesome.
And we're not sorry.
No, we're not even a little sorry. So we'll probably do it again in a future episode. Maybe even in the next one. Who knows? But at any rate, hydrogen can be used as a fuel in a couple of different ways. You could just burn it in an internal combustion engine. It is.
Sure.
Combustible. Mm-hmm. If you were to do that, it would actually produce some nitrous oxide as one of the things that would emit a pollutant. But another way you could use hydrogen is in a fuel cell. Hydrogen in a fuel cell is a really cool idea. It's not practical, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. First of all, the idea is that with a fuel cell, you've got essentially a membrane. And you have hydrogen on one side of this membrane and oxygen on the other side of the membrane. And that membrane allows ions to pass through, but not electrons. So the hydrogen really wants to get over to where the oxygen is. There's a catalyst that's on this membrane. There's an electrolyte on the membrane. It's all going to facilitate this chemical reaction that's going to happen. Actually, this physical reaction really that happens. So since the hydrogen wants to go and party with the oxygen, and the electrons are being a total pill about it, they ditch the electrons and then they go right on through that
membrane,
which is kind of like the bouncer at a club, right? You know, you want to get in the club, but you brought your, you know, dorky friend who is totally not club material. So your choice is either leave the club or ditch the dorky friend. Hydrogen ditches the dorky electron friend and goes into the club and parties with the oxygen. The electrons are thinking, oh, I'm having none of that. I will get into that club. I'm just using the back door. The back door in this case is going through some form of circuit. And then once it goes through the circuit, it comes to the other side of the fuel cell, rejoins the hydrogen and oxygen, says, didn't get rid of me after all, did ya? And then they all have a big water party. Because at that point, you have H2O.
Right. Yes. This is called electrochemical conversion.
I like my version, where it's a club.
I like that better, too.
Okay. At any rate, so the output here is really interesting. You get electricity, you get water, and you get heat. Heat is a byproduct as well. So a lot of people have said fuel cells, that's got to be the way to the future. Because think about it. You don't have to worry about any greenhouse gas emissions except for water vapor, which is a greenhouse gas, but it can easily be incorporated into the water cycle, whereas, you know, other ones can't. And the idea that
it's a contained cell. You're using the same product over and over again.
Well, yeah. Essentially, what happens is you get the water in the fuel cell, and then you have to refuel the fuel cell with more hydrogen. And then the question is, all right, where do you get the hydrogen? Aha, there's the rub. Because as it turns out, hydrogen, while plentiful, tends to buddy up with just about everything.
which is A, how you get the water, but you know, you can extract hydrogen from water.
But you have to expel energy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So the question then is, like, is it more efficient for you to free up that hydrogen so that you can get that pure hydrogen you need for the fuel cell? Is the energy that you're pouring in to get the hydrogen more than the benefit you're getting from the fuel cell? If it is, then it's an energy sink, like we talked about at the top of the podcast. And with hydrogen, that tends to be the problem, is that how do you get lots of pure hydrogen?
It doesn't occur that often here on Earth.
Yeah, not in its unbound form.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost always bound with something else. So you have to find a way of breaking those molecular bonds to free up that hydrogen. And that requires you to put forth a little effort. And that's where the problem is.
Right. I think the other big problem with hydrogen is a perception concept, because, you know, people think hydrogen and sometimes they think Hindenburg.
And then they think, oh, the humanity.
And yeah. And that's, and, you know, it's, I mean, yes, the Hindenburg, was filled with hydrogen, but really the problem there was the aluminum powder coating and various other explosive properties that they weren't really thinking about too hard.
Right. It also depends on whether it's an internal combustion engine use of hydrogen or a fuel cell use of hydrogen.
Right.
But it still does have, you know, issues
of the capacity
to burn really hot
and really fast.
How do you store it? And how do you make sure it gets to the fuel cell safely? Or do you just replace fuel cells? Is that the way you refuel your fuel cell vehicle? And if so, do you need to get those burly guys back over at the refueling station? Because, you know, these things get heavy. Remember, when we're talking about a fuel cell, that's one unit of what would be essentially a huge stack of these things.
Because if you just plug one in, it's not going to get you very far. But
it's not
going to
give you
whole...
much juice at all, really.
Yeah. And it would require something like a giant steel tank in order to create something sturdy enough to house this kind of gas.
Now, hydrogen, and of course, the heavier you make the vehicle, the more power you need to move the vehicle. So it becomes this you're chasing this constant problem that just shifts where the problem actually is, right? You think, oh, I solved this, but ooh, now this is the issue. This is something engineers struggle with all the time, not just in vehicle design or alternative fuels, but all sorts of applications. Now, hydrogen does contain less energy than gasoline if you're talking about by volume. If you're talking about by weight, hydrogen has the highest energy content of any fuel. But here's the thing. Hydrogen's really, really, really light.
Mm-hmm.
It's the lightest element. So when you're talking about getting a lot of hydrogen together, before it makes a weight of any appreciable amount, that's a lot of hydrogen. So that's why you talk about it being a low energy by volume as opposed to a high energy by weight. When you get enough for you to compare the hydrogen versus the gasoline, it
you
just
would have
doesn't
a
even
tank
out.
Bigger than the car, probably.
Yeah, that's the big issue, or one of the many issues, really. In the United States, hydrogen is mostly used to refine petroleum, to treat metals, and also to produce fertilizer. So, that's the other thing is that you always have to think about what we are using this stuff for currently, and, then thinking about the added stress we would put
supply
on the system.
Supply and demand, sure.
Yeah. And we'll talk about more of that in the next episode. So this leaves us with our final alternative fuel, which is not...
It's not really a fuel.
Not in the sense of the others. And we've already kind of touched on it with hydrogen fuel cells, but it's electricity. And electricity is just another alternative to making your cars go. And the interesting thing here is, of course, for those of you who know your history with cars...
Some of the first vehicles were electrical.
Yeah, electric cars actually predate the gasoline-powered cars. But electric cars were, while they were early versions of personal vehicles, they were a little limited. You were limited pretty much by the area that you could drive in, and that was mostly in cities, because they had the capacity to generate and distribute the electricity that you would need to recharge your vehicle. Once people got it into their heads, this crazy notion of, hey, this vehicle will actually allow me to go and explore beyond just getting from point A to point B in my city, but
out of
actually
your neighborhood and out somewhere.
Yeah, maybe
out across the wild blue yonder.
Right.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to drive from New York to, to Chicago. Then you would need something that would allow you to get further than that, or you would have to have some sort of infrastructure in place that could allow you to refuel. And that's kind of how gasoline took over.
Right.
Now,
These days, of course, there are lots of hybrid vehicles and a few all-electric vehicles. And we are creating more of an infrastructure around those for charging stations mm-hmm. in between, so that if you don't happen to have a house once every 30 miles along your route.
Right. Yeah. You can't just, sneakily plug in your vehicle to whatever outlet happens to be nearby. You can support it through these official infrastructure utilities that are out there. Also, there are other innovations like regenerative braking where you get
you save up some of the kinetic energy that you create from braking or
right.
from,
and normally you would just,
stuff.
You would just lose that energy. That energy would normally just be converted into heat and you would lose it.
Right.
But with regenerative braking, you're actually capturing some of that energy that otherwise would just go into heat and you can put that back into the battery. Now, Of course, there's no way to completely eliminate heat. If we could, we'd have the perfect closed system, and every time we use the brakes, we would capture all of that energy and put it right back into the battery. Doesn't mean that you would never have to recharge the battery, but it would mean that you could do it.
You could go for a really long time.
Yeah, but turns out, you know, we can't do that. We can't create
curse you, physics.
Oh, you thermodynamics. I blame Newton, really. It's his fault. If that apple had not hit his head and he had just stuck with figs, we would have been... I think I'm mixing things up. Anyway, so getting back into electricity, the nice thing about an electrical car is that you really have no appreciable emissions to speak of, right? You know, you do have to worry about whatever the battery is made out of, if that stuff is toxic or dangerous, and how do you dispose of that once
right.
you need to eventually replace it. You know, keeping in mind, you can charge and drain a battery several times, but eventually you will need to replace it. So that's a concern. On top of that, just because your car is clean, like the electricity isn't producing any sort of appreciable emissions,
doesn't mean that there were no emissions created during the processing of that battery.
Yeah,
or
of the generation
of the electricity that
yeah.
you put into that battery. Right. Yeah, no. because how does, you know, how does power get to your house?
Yeah, if your power is coming from a coal-powered plant, then the fact that your car is not emitting greenhouse gases or pollutants is nice, but it's still getting its energy from a source that really is producing a lot of greenhouse gases and pollutants. So in a way, the way I like to say is that it kind of shifts the burden,
the responsibility,
to a different party, but it's all still part of this overall system. So again, if your goal, because it doesn't necessarily mean that your goal to switch from one fuel to an alternative, it doesn't necessarily have to be environmental. But if it is environmental,
you have to take all of this other stuff into consideration.
Right. You can't just switch to electrical and think, I am now saving the world.
I'm absolved.
It all depends on how that energy is produced. Now, if your energy is being produced by plants that are mainly using hydropower or geothermal power or solar or wind power, first of all, I'm amazed. Not so much with the hydropower. There are quite a few facilities
Definitely.
That use that. But
most people aren't off the grid enough, and most people, yeah, but most areas are not, in the U.S. anyway, are not using that kind of power for generation.
Not everyone has access to the kind of stuff. Like, you know, if you're using hydropower, you've got to have access to a great amount of water that's in motion. If you happen to be in a part of the United States or the world in general that is not close to any sort of major river or tidal motion or anything like that where you can harness this, then you have to find something else to create your electricity. It's not even that you're necessarily, you know, part of the what some people think of as a giant conspiracy among car companies and oil companies and that sort of thing. Personally, I don't believe that conspiracy really exists. I believe that there are a lot of companies out there that have interests, and they will lobby to have those interests protected.
Oh, absolutely.
But I don't think it goes so far as to let us suppress all innovation. They don't need to. And we'll talk about more about that in the next podcast.
But, right.
But at any rate,
it's a lack of availability of rare earth elements to help things like photovoltaics and access to the natural resources needed to really collect wind on a wind farm or collect
right.
solar energy.
Exactly. Yeah. You may not be in a part of the world that is conducive to any of that. So you have to get it somehow. So yeah, electricity is good in theory, but again, it all depends on how that electricity was generated, whether or not you are net doing a service to the environment. And again, if that's not your concern, if the environment isn't the reason you're switching to an alternative fuel, this is a moot discussion in the first place.
Right.
Because like we said, there are lots of different reasons. All right. So that is the overview. Do you have anything else about electricity you wanted to add?
I think that's it.
Excellent. All right. So we have covered the various alternatives that are typically talked about when we talk about alternative fuel. In our next episode, we're really going to cover why is gasoline something that we really depend on? We've touched on a lot of it already, and talk about what are the big challenges to moving to a gasoline-free fuel system. And, there are quite a few challenges, as it turns out. But we'll cover that in our next episode. If you guys have any suggestions for future episodes that we should cover here on Tech Stuff, please let us know. A lot of you have been writing in and giving us some great suggestions for future topics.
Thank you so much for all of your letters.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. We've been adding to the list, and trust us, that list is very important to us because it means that we don't have to sit there and invent stuff. We already know what you want to hear.
Yes.
And when we know what you want to hear, it makes it better for everybody. So keep that up. Let us know. Send us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com. Or drop us a line on social media. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle at both of those is TechStuffHSW. And Lauren and I will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi there, I'm Bob Pittman, Chairman and CEO of iHeartMedia. I'm excited to announce a new season of my podcast, Math and Magic, Stories from the Frontiers of Marketing. Our guests this season show us big risk can yield big rewards, like Rob Reilly, the creative head of one of the world's leading advertising firms.
I try to create environments where anybody can say anything without any judgment.
Listen to a brand new season of Math and Magic on our very own iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Jay Shetty, and I'm the host of On Purpose. This week, I talked to Tiffany Haddish in a hilarious, deep, thoughtful interview where we dive into family trauma, grief, sobriety, love, and dating.
I got a big heart, and I'm very forgiving, but like, don't abuse it. It's been abused enough.
Listen to On Purpose with Jay Shetty on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss this one.